come to Uncle Mo's for family fun. It's good, 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 good.
Sounds good.
Hello and a ho 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 to this very special festive edition of Uncle Mo's Family Feedback, where we look through the dizzying highs, the terrifying lows, and the creamy middles of The Simpsons through random episode generation. I'm of course your host, Tyler McRae, and join with me yet again, we have got Hazel on the line, folks, within the tavern. And it wasn't too long ago that we were in the tavern ourselves there playing a very special game of Blood on the Clock Tower. If you're not aware, folks, that into your tabletop or your kooky nerdy deduction games, it's just essentially good versus bad, and then you've got to like lie or fib or find the truth and all that. And I was absolutely honking, and I'm far too trusting of a person, and to make it about Simpsons, Hazel was running the excuse of I don't know what's going on here. Or the if she had a drawstring, he'd just go, don't ask me, I'm just a girl. And she wiped the floor with us. So, Hazel, how did you win, you sneaky sausage, and how the hell are you?
Well, I'm very good, thank you. And I would just like to say I was on the winning team. And I think my winning move was actually killing you. I was responsible for your death, so you're welcome.
Wait, seriously, this wasn't...
Yeah.
This wasn't... Yeah, that takes the piss. not that I asked at the time I was there, folks, but just through, like, I was too shocked that, what was it, this, like, because it goes in, like, days and nights, and there's three in total listeners out there. And what was it, at the end of day two, four people had died or had been slaughtered, so it was like, oh, fucking hell. And I don't know why it didn't clock on, but I guess... That was the thing as well. Half of the people were newbies. You were new to it. I were new to it. And it was a clean sweep. It was like the, good God, it was like the,
the Red Wedding.
The Red Wedding. There you go.
There you go.
I was gonna go with the sports reference, but I couldn't even think of the fucking team, the Golden State Warriors in like 2016. But that fits in more with this demographic. Thank you, Hazel. But I do recommend it, though. Like, if you've got a spare hour and a half, 2 hours, and a load of eager mates that are into your fibbing and lying and all that there. I'm only good with lying card games, it seems. Not big line social strategy games, but...
Yeah, you're good at poker.
I do try. And the old skull and cockroach poker. Please give them a go, folks. They're absolutely magic there, but... It's a Christmas special. We've not had you on a Christmas episode here, Hazel. I won't do the, I don't know, radio ting of like, what's your Christmas plan? What do you have on your turkey? We've already done that in one episode anyway. But as far as like, here you go, Christmas media consumption there. And we'll get into it, especially with how it opens up with Krusty here. But have you got certain favourites you have on in the countdown to Christmas there? Are you always got to watch It's a Miracle or... Miracle on 34th Street.
It's a miracle. What's that? Did you mean Miracle on 34th Street?
No, it's a Wonderful Life. It's a Wonderful Life. Clarence, that's the one. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
God, I just can't think of anything that would be worse than watching such a depressing film at Christmas.
But he doesn't kill himself and then he runs home and it's all happy and they give him his money.
You're right. He doesn't kill himself. That's what we can all be helpful for. Yeah. I really like Father Christmas. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but just for the folks at home, it is done by the same person that did The Snowman, and it is just so funny. It's got that very...
Oh, I've not seen it, but I can see the style of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's got that very British humour in it. It's very sarcastic, it's very tongue-in-cheek, and it imagines what does Santa do the other, you know, 364 days of the year. Everybody else is having such a wonderful time at Christmas, but he's absolutely knackered, and to be honest with you, he's sick of it. He's sick of doing Christmas, but he does it every year because he loves the giving children presents and bringing them joy. But also, he does like to have a little bit of a holiday. So you get to have 45 minutes with Father Christmas, seeing him go all around the world, not on his, well, I suppose on his sleigh, but mostly just to have a bit of a holiday.
I think I remember one scene from that, like, I guess, I'm assuming way back when we taped a load of stuff on VHS. Is there something where, like, he's enjoying himself in Vegas. He's having the buffet.
Yes.
And then he realizes, oh, there's a bill. Oh, bollocks. And then he, like, runs off on his sleigh.
Yeah, that's pretty much.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's the only bit I remember then, yeah. Okay, no, it is somewhere in the annals of my mind. So is that your top, like, must-watch then out of all your other films in your series there?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, yesterday I happened to turn on the TV and it was part of the way through and I had to actively like stop myself from watching it because I wanted to watch it all the way through rather than part of the way through because I didn't want to ruin it for myself.
For myself, like, I mean, the only films that I outright try and watch, it is Elf because it is just great blend of a Will Ferrell comedy and heart and all that and a bit of surrealism. Other than that, without a shadow of a doubt, they're not Christmas films, but every time BBC drops them on Christmas or Boxing Day, it's anything Wallace and Gromit.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Honestly, yeah. So whether it's your grand day out or your wrong trousers, your close shave, matter of loath and death there. And folks, Chicken Run, that's going to drop very close to Christmas on Netflix there, Dawn of the Nugget. I'm well hyped for that there.
They know what they're doing.
They do. They really do. So, like, whenever I can, and it's always just been a little bonding thing with me, my mum and my dad there. It's just so immaculately done there. So that's the one we always get adamant on. The other ones are all literally sitcom-based there, which I will get into, as we will do this episode here, which is Marge Be Not Proud from Season 7, Episode 11, directed by Stephen Dean Moore and written by Mike Scully, with the original air date being December the 17th, 1995, and the couch gag being Homer notes a big old plug in the middle of the living rooms there, and he pulls it and they all get sucked down the drain. Well, to carry on the Aardman theme, flushed away. There we go. Mm. Very nice. With this in particular there, Hazel, have you got any nostalgic memories of this one? Or of Simpsons Christmas episodes in general? Do they hold up well? Do you have a favourite?
I really like this one, to be honest with you. I don't have, like, really, really strong memories of it, but I think mainly my memory of it is watching it not at Christmas, which I think is why it gets not too confounded or associated with Christmas for me. I think also I really loved what should have been. Or was it the first episode, the one where they get Santa's little helper?
Yeah, the very first episode of the Simpsons Christmas episode, yeah.
Yes, but it shouldn't have been. And we've discussed that on the pod before, haven't we?
Yes, because it wasn't first in production, but it was first in broadcast, which if you go to other Simpsons podcasts, they can give you the gist of it there. But yeah, what should have been was like a mess, and it still ended up being a mess, and I think that was some Enchanted Evening, and it looked gross, yes. And everyone's like got a weird hue of green, or it just looks surreal. So yeah, they went with a Christmas episode to start with. It kind of works; it makes it unique there, and it's got a nice family feel with it. You know, typical Hallmarky stuff there. But I'd say my fave. I was talking to a good friend of mine about it. It's one we've reviewed within our spectrum. I think it's the one from season 9, and a load of people don't really, you know, sing its praises or think that much of it, but I just like how, I don't know, cynical it is, and it shithouses the end. So essentially Bart burns the gifts, and then the family lie, and they all give the gifts, and then they find out the Simpsons lied, so how do they make it up to them? Oh yeah, we'll just rob everything in your house, then that's where he's at, with we're even Stevens then. And then the fighting over a washcloth, it's just, just really creases me.
I do like that one as well, when the Christmas tree turns into a little puck.
Yes, that's it, and it's no more sausage for little Homer, and it's all burnt together.
Yeah.
Yes, I do remember vividly. And I'll tell you what, another one for folk to check out, I can't remember what season it was. I want to say it's within the teens, I want to say, but like, it's kind of a take on Homer Loves Flanders, but Homer becomes the nicest, most generous man in Springfield, and it's a competition between him and Ned for who's the most generous at Christmas. Mm. And, like, Gil's got nice little bit parts in it there, and it's just, like, nice little parodies here and there. That's quite fun. I might put it in post here, or a little clip in there, but everyone go ahead and look that one out.
Pathetic Flanders, thinking he can buy people's love with thoughtful gifts.
Cool, Mr. Flanders gave me a Krusty brand operation game.
Ooh, you just tweezed my wang.
And we kick this one off with, you know, Krusty at Christmas there, sponsored by ILG, selling your body's chemicals after you die. And, what is it? Little Susie's Cupcakes, a subsidiary of ILG there.
Yeah.
Like the real Unilever of the Simpsons universe there. But Krusty's coming in there. He's welcoming his home, his mock-up home. And it's just a nice little touch of those gaudy 70s Christmas special. Like, a Christmas with, Dick Van Dyke and
yes.
Andy Williams there, and he just shuts it on the production there. This Hazel, as he prepares himself to go on a 3-minute tirade, this reminds me of another newish Christmas tradition I've always got to watch. Knowing me, knowing you, Alan Partridge at Christmas. It's his last big final TV episode, trying to get a second series. And, like Partridge, he puts his foot in his mouth, puts turkey in his mouth, and it all goes tits up. It's a brilliant watch, folks. And he keeps has to reiterate, like, this is my mock-up home. It's not the real home there, because his home's been broken into every single episode that he was broadcast. So every time he went to the recording studio, his home got broke into. and then he just, like, oh, it's magnificent there. And all the supporting cast are on. Dune McKitchen's absolutely brilliant. Now with Two Doors Down fame, but it's wonderful. And for your little Top of the Pops thing, Hazel, Mick Hucknall makes a very slim guest appearance in it.
Nice, love it.
It's a big one for me.
I didn't catch your name, was it?
Mary.
Mary, no, like the Virgin Mary. Are you? Oh, it's none of my business.
Yes, I am actually.
Oh, well done. fire away.
I'd like to ask Mr. Hares why he allows on the BBC...
How did this happen?
What?
Nothing, carry on.
I'd like to ask Mr. Hares why he allows on the BBC the graphic depiction of such sordid practices as swearing, fighting, masturbation...
Listen, love, sorry, if you're going to talk about the subject, can you just avoid using that word?
Masturbation?
Yes, that's the one.
Well, I do object to the graphic depiction of onanism.
What's onanism?
It's masturbation.
Thank you. look, love, what's your problem with it?
Well, I don't like it.
Well, don't do it.
That and, Father Ted has to get watched every year.
Oh, absolutely.
The Father Ted Christmas special, yeah.
You can't go too wrong with that.
Yeah, whether it's them getting lost in Ireland's biggest lingerie section,
yes.
So I've heard. Or Todd Umptious there trying to go Metal Mission Impossible with the Golden Cleric. It's just watch this. I'm waxing lyrical. We could go on forever there.
Good afternoon and welcome to the 5th annual presentation of the Golden Cleric.
Every year the Catholic Church gives an award to a priest for outstanding achievement. This year's winner is someone who's overcome controversy in the past when rumours of financial irregularities threatened his career in the
future. No!
But following a thorough investigation, no formal charges were ever made against
him. Money was just resting in my account.
Even though authorities were confused by what they saw as bizarre irregularities in his accounts.
Not enough of that now.
But it just reminded me of that. I'm very much a sitcom guy when it comes to Christmas. I've only just started getting into Bottom, like, the past 2 years. That Christmas special was really good.
Oh, yes.
But,
another
yes,
Brussels
that's...
sprout.
Right, now, Eddie, you scrape all the congeal bits off the cutlery and lay the table. All right? I'll get on with the brandy batter. Where's the brandy? Well, that's just effing marvellous, isn't it?
Oh, hold your horses, Richie. Don't panic, because... Vodka margarine!
That's brilliant, Eddie. Are you sure it's flammable?
Well, I anticipated your concern, so I spiced it up with a couple of cans of hairspray.
That is brilliant!
That, yeah, it's always on repeat there. But Krusty has some guests as well. Respected private citizen Tom Landry and South American sensation... I know who this is as well. It was, again, she was being like the 70s and 80s. I think it was, I can't think of the name, but it was
Chuchulita.
One, like, yeah, that's the one, yeah. And Shushashi.
I don't know if you know this, but actually Chuchulita turns up in another Simpsons episode.
As in the parody or actual Chuchulita?
Well, I guess the parody.
Okay.
But she is in, she's the presenter of Teleboobies.
Oh, is that the same one?
Yes.
Oh, I do know. Counterclockwise.
Yeah.
Yeah, no way. Oh, that makes a load of sense.
Yes.
Of course it is, yeah.
And I'm so glad that that's who they chose and then brought them back. I've got no idea who Tom Landry is. I'm just going to throw that out there.
And I think the gag is, he's a renowned, very famous American football coach. He coached the Dallas Cowboys to victory in the 60s. I think they won a couple of Super Bowls. And I think the gag of it being respected private citizen, Family Guy have made gags about it. South Park have, and I think Simpsons have after this. Like, in the 80s and 90s, unless you went to a bar or you had certain cable rights, there was no way you were watching the NFL.
Oh.
And only certain channels that could broadcast it, like CBS and Fox and all that, they can only mention the words NFL, Miami Dolphins and all that. There.
Right.
So them saying, oh, we've got to get around this, he's a respected citizen. You can't say NFL coach of the Dallas Cowboys because XYZ own the rights there. yeah, so that's the way of skirting around it. But come back later, folks, because there's a video Christmas card from Tupac Shakur as well. What a reference. Like, before I got into like hip-hop and grime and all that, I had no idea who Tupac Shakur was. And I watched this like when I was really young. Now just hearing that in Simpsons, I never thought I'd hear a rapper's name in this, in like peak Simpsons. It's just really surreal, Hayes.
Oh, but what about Kid Rock?
Oh, Christ, don't remind me. Oh, oh, lest we forget, yeah. But we kind of worked a way through that, though. If we could, if, you know, the timelines were different and you get the biggest star in the world, you get Snoop Dogg on doing a feature.
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah, we've already fixed that one there. But Hazel, I'd love for you to break down this wonderful ad there for the latest hit craze in video gaming, Bone Storm. Now, this is clearly a Mortal Kombat parody.
Yeah.
Surely. Now, were you a big beat 'em up fighter fan? Did you have a Tekken? Did you have a Mortal Kombat or a Virtual Fighter? Or did you miss out on that phase of gaming?
No. So my big thing was Street Fighter 2 for the Mega Drive.
Okay, Street Fighter then, yeah.
Yeah, it was the one game that I could play, but I could only play as Chun-Li. And honestly, I'm unbeatable as Chun-Li. Me and Mike, we went to an arcade, and I said, "Oh, do you want a round of Street Fighter?" And obviously, I was Chun-Li, and I beat him. And Mike is a very big gamer, so it was very shocking to me the fact that I'd beat him at Street Fighter. And he's like really impressed and was like saying to me, "Oh, you know what? You're actually really good at this." And I was like, "Yes," because I had years of practice. Years and years of just playing as Chun-Li.
Does the, like, it's like a twig going back and forth with the leg. It's like a very long, spammy diagonal kick. Oh,
yeah,
okay,
that's
I've
right.
seen that.
Yeah,
I've seen people do a hack with the sumo guy as well. He just does a constant palm strike as well.
Yeah, with Chun-Li as well. So if you're playing two player and both of you play as Chun-Li, one of you gets the blue outfit, and then the other one gets the pink outfit, which you never really see. So a nice little Easter egg there for you.
Did you always try and be player two then to get the alternate attire?
Yes, I did.
Because it's such a rarity. Ah, very nice, sweet. Were you also one of those that, like, oh, I'm playing Smash Brothers, like, I really want to be an alternate costume there. Let me get, like, Kirby number 3, and he's yellow.
Oh, do you know what I hate? What the fuck's it called? Oh my god, you've literally just said it.
Smash Brothers.
Yeah, I hate Smash Brothers. I can't do it.
Really?
I don't like it.
But that's beat 'em up and spamming stuff as well. I thought that'd be right up your alley.
Yeah, but I feel like for me, there's no skill to it. But I think maybe I've just not given it a fair whack.
I think that could be it there. Well, as long, I tell you what, as long as it's not Mario Party there, I'm having flashbacks to the last New Year's party I was at there. Good Lord. So just, why are you giving, not to sound like a boomer, but why are you giving medals for being like last or most improved? That's not fair. I don't want the, why are you creeping up the stars when I've had a nice consistent second place there? That's not on.
You just have
country
to deal with
to
what
mean something,
given.
Hazel. This country used to mean something.
What about yourself? What about you with the beat-em-ups?
You know what? Tekken. I see it getting lauded, and then I realise, oh shit, I had that game and I actually loved it. But Tekken 3 was my first exposure. And it wasn't when it came out either. I got PS1 in 99 and my cousin recommended it. So got it, and I always played either... well, King, because I'm a massive wrestling fan, or Yoshimitsu, because he's a skull guy. I didn't realise he was an actual number, I just thought he was a skeleton with a samurai sword. I thought, that's fucking sick. Or that little dinosaur, which was really weird, and you could only like unlock when you completed the whole game. But yeah, I always used to go as that little dinosaur as well, who was apparently a little hack. But as far as like Christmas releases and what games are begged for at Christmas, I don't know. As far as like, I remember like, you know, oh, I want Wii Party and Wii Sport and all that back in the late 2000s, when I had a Wii. But generally, I think the only one I can remember begging for a PS when it was in my PS2 era. Do you remember Buzz, the game show?
Oh my god, are you joking? With that like weird guy with the head?
Yeah, with the little quiff fella there. And then it's like an actual remote control panel that you plug in there. And I got really into it because I'm like, was game shows through and through throughout my life, so I thought, this is brilliant, and you kind of need three people to do it, because if it's just you and a mate, it's a bit sad. It's worse if you're on your own and just trying to beat your own high score, but you need, like, at least three people there. But that, I think that was the biggest one I was begging for, because there was no way I was getting San Andreas, I was way too young, or any of the other cool games there. So I think that's the one I had the biggest drive for, if I remember correctly, which says a lot, but, like, I'm surprising myself there. Bart is enthralled by Bonestorm there. Buy me Bonestorm or go to hell there. And the parents aren't having it there. This is a truer statement as ever. I think like the price has just pretty much stayed the same each generation. Sorry, honey, those games cost up to and including $70 there. And I look back now, and this is not the Gamescast, this is not GameStation the podcast. God, there's a retro one. This is not CX the podcast, folks, but... I can't believe I actually paid like premium price for a PS2 game, Hazel. I think what would be the, was it like $34.99 or $39.99 would be new releases for PS2?
Yeah, thereabouts.
That's weird. That's weird to think with such like an old console. And again, I remember doing it with PS3, and you go to PS5 games like 50 to 60 now. It's just insanity. I don't get unless it's, you know, long live the PSN sales and all that. Unless you get it through there, I don't know how, like, young kids get into gaming.
I know, absolutely. I've just done the inflation on this $70 game. In 1995, $70, if it was converted to 2023 money, would be $141.32.
Oh, Christ. Jesus.
Yeah. Absolutely maddening.
And that's just Bonestorm without the blood. I think the one with the blood, it's a little bit more. Because that was the thing with Mortal Kombat as well, wasn't it? Was there like two versions, or was it like a cheat code to get blood?
Yeah, you had to put in a cheat code because they'd censored it. Yeah, they censored it for the US market.
It was cheat code. There we go. So Bart's really gutted with this. He's got his goal now to aim for, but it's tuck-in time. And Marge, very sweetly but kind of lamely, sings a little song there to Bart to tuck him in to rest his sweet caboose. And Bart says, you know, Mom, you know, I'm not a little kid anymore. This tucking time is lame. And Marge, forever being herself there, never change, honey. You know, if loving my kids is lame, then I'm just a big lame there. And Bart's just trying to get it through to her. And well, wife, it's like a box of chocolates. And then just Bart's not having it. Clanging his slipper against his little paper bin there, and just carries on. Now I've not done it with my mum, but like definitely with my dad. Like I think when I hit 19, 20, when I was about to go to uni, I'm like, Right, I don't think you need any more life lessons. Ha, fucking very ironic there. Right, just every excuse you just say, oh, well, you've got to make sure to dis-. No, like, I was very much banging his head against the bin there. Like, no, I don't need any more life lessons. Just no need. I'm just eating my breakfast. Like, there's no need for this, Dad.
Not everything is a life lesson.
That's it. No, that's precisely it. Was your mum or dad ever like this with Marge, being like overbearing in the nicest way but the lamest way?
No, my parents were pretty much, you know, well, you'll figure out these things all by yourself, and off I went. So yeah, luckily they left me pretty much to my own devices, and there was no life lessons needed to be taught necessarily.
At age 10, with your bindle across like a hobo, I'm off to see the world, father, goodbye. So they just left you to your own devices. Wait, as in like a, oh, she knows better, like she's, you know, mature and all that, she's got her head screwed on, she's fine, or was this like a Mean Girls, hey, I'm the cool mom, guys, come on, it's good?
No, it was definitely a thing of, I think they trusted me and they knew that I could make good decisions, so I think that helped. However, little did they know that I was out on the park drinking ciders at 14, so maybe we could have had some more guidance, but there you have it.
Oh, right. That's the thing with me. Like, I think maybe just because I ended up moving to a village when I was like 11, 12, and also like I had a very disciplinarian dad there, and just frightened the, you know, the laws, and how dare you, the police will be round here and all that. Like, I never had an early drinking phase until I got to like college and house parties at 16, 17 there. I was never a park bench kid. I feel like that's something I actually missed out on. Were you a White Lightning girl or a Lambrini, or what was your choice?
We used to do this thing called a turbo, which was basically mixing vodka with cider, which was horrendous. Like, it was so bad.
Oh, Jesus, Hazel, no.
I know, and then you put a tiny little bit of cordial in it to just kind of take the edge off. But yeah, that's what we used to do. My favourite thing, and to be honest with you, I feel like I want to try it again. I want to try peach Lambrini, because I remember having that when I was about 14 and absolutely loving it. And I wonder if it's still as good today.
Do you think you could do a mulled Lambrini? Because you can do your Glühwein, as you get at your Christmas markets currently, folks, there. How would mulled Lambrini go down?
It'd be horrible, because because it's sparkling, so it would be...
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would... Okay, I got you.
Yeah, it would not go well. Thinking about Bart's, you know, little bedtime routine, what's your bedtime routine, Tyler?
Oh, wow. Well, to disappoint people, I'm afraid I don't put on a mask or creams or serums there, I'm afraid. What do I do? I can't even say I could put sprays on my pillow or all that. I literally just, like, crawl into bed. Other than, like, changing into my nighttime gear and my pyjamas and all that. Or just the very thing of, like, I will consume TikTok until I feel drowsy. Like, I feel that's just the modern way to sleep now. It's just... Oh, and then you'll get that little video of like, oh, have you been on TikTok too long? Here comes the girl checking her eyes in the bathroom. You should come off it now. I'm like, no, I need to see like this. I need to see when's this glass bottle going to smash? Like, by what step? No, you can't force me to stop TikTok. That's literally the only kind of real nighttime routine I've got, Hazel, if I'm honest. I feel like yours is going to be a lot more wholesome and complex than mine.
Sometimes I like to have a little tea whilst I'm settling down in bed. I like to chill out with some YouTube. But I do have a little spray that I like to put on, which is, it's Sleepy by Lush. And honestly, it's like lavender, but not like grandmother lavender. It's got a little bit of kind of oaty sweetness in there. So it's almost like you've got like... lavender mixed with Horlicks in a way, and it's just very wholesome and very nice. Yeah,
that does sound a hell of a lot better than my chaotic evening of, oh well, eventually I will sleep. Straight after this, you know, oh, here's the ghost that's not really there but followers for part two. They sucked me in, Hazel. They sucked me in, and then the part two never comes. I'm so annoyed. Bart passes through the android's dungeon and he notices Bonestorm for 99 cents. He thought, oh, I'm well in here. Chucks the 99 cents at comic book guy, but realises that he's $59 short there, as that is the rental price. But unfortunately, they're all rented out. But they have an abundance of Lee Carvello's putting challenge.
Ooh.
And I tell you what, we'll discuss it now rather than right at the end there, because we'll get our final thoughts and the like there. I'm surprised how this has blown up into a meme, Hazel. It's not like, I don't know, the core five of like Boo Earns and Into the Bushes and Steamed Hams there, but the amount of like edits I've seen of, you know, Lee Carvello games converted into like Taxi Driver or Tony Hawk's, like, it's really surreal there. But I'm surprised how much strength this has got in a meme itself, Hazel.
I feel like it's quite strong because it is so adaptable, and you can kind of put it into anything. And I quite like this idea of other golfing games being incorporated into it. So whether it's like Mario Golf and things like that. So it's, I think it's got some legs. It's got some longevity, which is always the sign of a good meme.
Bart even notices Milhouse has got Bonestorm somehow. And it's great. It's fantastic. The whole static and, you know, loudness from the TV and the sheer awesomeness of Bonestorm's hitting his face there, illuminated up. I've been there. It's great. Oh, I've done zero my name. Thrill House. And we cut to the telly. And I tell you what, the first time I watched it, I just creased myself. I think it must have been like 11. I thought, oh, yeah, that's a bit rude, because I knew what the latter end of that word meant. What do we see, Hazel?
We see Thrill Ho.
Milhouse's Bonestorm! This is great! And all I've done is enter my name! Thrill House!
Say, cool dude, can I play too?
It's only a one-player game!
Then how come it says second player score?
Mom! Bart's swearing!
Hey, what the hell?
No,
damn
out,
it, I wasn't
out,
swearing.
Right now. Out!
even then, I'm so childish. Yeah, it's just, it gets me every single time. But that was I'm assuming that was a real challenge. I only really got in, like, would go for a bowling alley or to a bowling birthday party. I don't ever get that on the, you know, Dino Crisis or House of the Dead 4, and you type in, like, your three-word name, so I'd be T-Y-L, I couldn't be Tyler. But I never had it with, like, home games. Did you have this issue, Hazel?
I didn't, but I think having the struggle of trying to think of something cool at the arcade to put as your three letters was definitely a struggle, because you didn't want to just, like, put your actual name. You wanted to have something cool. You wanted to be Thrill House, not Thrill Ho, you know? So it's a very, very relatable scene there, but I really like the artistry of that scene, just because, like, when you're looking at it, you're like, wow, what's he playing? Oh god, he must have been as cool as the advert. No, he literally just popped his name in. That's it. I like as well about this is it reminds me as well about Millpool.
Yes it does. Brilliant. Oh wow. So you were never an edgy kid when typing your name to those machines. You never went with C-O-K or D-I-K like I did? Was I a man on his own island there? No, okay, clearly not.
That's definitely a boy thing,
my friend tried to... Oh no, it very much is, as my friend tried to up the ante, but he was a bit too think to say, oh, I will just get rid of the vowel in this horrible swear word. So he was called Cun, C-U-N. He didn't think to go C-N-T. What an idiot. So, like, fourth place on Sega Rally Racing, it's C-U-N. What an idiot. This resonated with me as well. Not quite the two-player game, but great example here. We're just, hey, buddy, can I jump in on this? Oh, it's a one-player game. Well, why does it say second-player score? Oh, Bart's swearing, and then, oh, scummy move there. What a weaselly little move. I only ever had something adjacent like this when I'm not, oh god, I stopped being mates with them like a couple months after that as well, among a few other things. But I used to have a friend who'd go over and play FIFA, and if I was winning by a goal or two or that, and it would get to like the 89th minute, he would just like turn off his Xbox 360 and say, no, it didn't count. Like, the most fragile of egos there. Like, and like, I was a horrible winner back, I was a horrible loser back in the day, but even then I wouldn't shut off stuff. I'd let the game save over him or that. But oh, what a petty fella he was. Good god. Did that ever happen with you, Hazel? Or did you have it like, oh, well, let your little sister play. All right, well, I'll unplug the controller for you, Hazel, and you can pretend to play. Were you one of them?
Yeah, that was definitely it. I think I may have spoken about it before on the pod. That when we used to play video games, that my sisters would give me the unplugged controller, it was always on Sonic 2. So you had Tails, who was, you know, the computer would control it, and I always thought that I was doing the controlling, which obviously I wasn't.
Oh no!
Very sad times for me. Little Hazel was very sad. But yeah, no, I think growing up with four sisters, you had to be very, very good at being a good loser and being a good winner as well. There was no time to be sore about anything like that. And we always had to share, which again, Milhouse doesn't have to do.
But comes across the try and save, and he's got some sort of a master plan. You know, maybe if I stand next to the games looking sad, someone will feel sorry and buy it for me. So he goes right to the console section there, and he spots it. And then we get, oh my god, this, like, I think I spoke about briefly, like, scenes that make me cringe, but it always seems to be like gross body stuff. Like, and I'll say it again, worst one ever for me is when Homer gets laser eye surgery. But sir, you need the drops or your eyes will crust over. Then 3 seconds later, Jesus. I know, awful. The sound effect was necessary, folks. but as far as like, awkward peep show cringe, as I'd categorise it, this little C word here, oh my god, Gavin. Ugh. Like, and it tells you like I'm a bit of a mama's boy as well there, but I just think, no, for God's sake, that's your mum, mate. Like, please help cover for me, Hazel, because I'm cringing too hard. Like, how does Gavin treat his mum?
Oh, he's so awful to her, and it's very clear that they're a very well-off family, and here we go. This is deep knowledge here. But the rich mum had a Prada purse on, and is a detail that I had never recognised before. Yeah, until I looked, watching it this time, and I was like, they've tried to make make it look like a Prada bag, and I was like, yes, my knowledge up here is peak, it's elite. But yeah, this little shit Gavin, what a little cunt. Like, don't ever speak to your mum like that. That's awful. You know, you might as well, you know, you might be rich and, you know, your mum might have a Prada bag and she can afford to buy you a $140 game, but, you know, not today, Gavin, you little bastard.
Spoke to my friend about this scene there because I was busy recommending, Simpsons Christmas episodes, here you go. And he said he couldn't remember that scene. I went, oh, do you not remember, like, little Gavin abuses his mum and that? And he said, oh, yeah, you know what he needs, like... And I believe it's canon that his mum dates, because Gavin also appears in Lisa Gets an A, where Lisa ends up getting sick and, you know, da-da-da. He's in the supermarket getting stuff. And he goes, shut up, Mom. Oh, you're lucky second dad's not here, or like third dad. So like, she's obviously like, has dated many different people there. Someone mate went, oh, you know what he needs? He needs to hear his mum getting fucked by a third boyfriend. I was like, Jesus Christ. But he would sort him out. Like, I think he needs to be kind of like,
oh my
a bit
God.
Humiliated or a bit embarrassed. And then that'll put him on the straight and narrow. And he's like, he wasn't wrong. Shout out to him.
Oh my god.
Did you have any real life Gavin friends or know anyone like that growing up?
Actually, I did. One of my friends, I won't say their name, just in case, but whenever their mum used to speak, it was honestly, it was like every single thing she would say, she would like be like, oh my God, Mum, I can't believe you just said that. Oh my God, that's so stupid. You're such a dick. Da-da-da-da-da. And it was just kind of like, your mum's just offered to make you dinner. Like, just calm down. Like, you don't be such a spoiled little gobshite.
Oh, no. It's the worst. I had it, thankfully it wasn't to this extreme, but again, just growing up there and obviously just the relationship with my dad and more so my mum. No, it just makes me cringe hard there, because again, I can bear doing that to my mum. Not even just repercussions, but just like, it's just awkward for the people around you as well. There, it's just, oh no, could never be me.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it possibly could be Bart, as he thinks that must be the happiest kid in the world, and as he's reveling in the sight of Gavin, he comes across Jimbo and Nelson there. Shoplifting away with the four-finger discount, dude. And it's a victimless crime, apparently, like punching someone in the dark. Now, I'm never going to condone the actions, or even support the actions of Nelson Muntz here, but I'll say, do not shoplift, particularly, do not shoplift from independent or small or family-run businesses. There you go.
True.
That's nice and legal. Do not shoplift there.
But if you want to steal from Walmart...
Yeah, if you choose to go somewhere else, a big, massive multimedia or multinational conglomerate, and not pay, there you go. I'm getting the legalese out, Hazel. If you decide to just not pay for your items, that's down to you. I'm not your lawyer.
If you accidentally leave it in the bottom of the pram and you walk out because the baby is crying, that's okay. That's all right too.
So Bart gets fantasies, he gets ideas about stealing the game. And I tell you what, I didn't watch it when it came out, but the first time I watched this, little Tyler's head just exploded. I couldn't believe what they were referencing here, Hazel. Who are they referencing? Who is in the conscience of Bart here?
It's the ultimate crossover. So we've got Mario and Luigi, who are his angel and his devil, and then you've got Donkey Kong, who comes in and he's just absolutely wildcarding it, and it's like, oh, it doesn't matter. And then in comes what is his name, the pudding guy.
Carvel, yeah. Hey son, how will this help your pudding?
And then the one that really seals the deal is that Sonic the Hedgehog comes racing in and says, do it, just take it. And I think that is the final thing that tops Bart off. And really, it's not the only crime that Sonic the Hedgehog is responsible for, to be honest. I mean, Sonic 06 was an absolute travesty.
Oh, I was wondering where you were going with all that. I didn't know if you were going to reference, like, the old Sonic the Hedgehog animated series where at the end he gives life lessons like, stealing's bad, kids. Well, but no, okay, we're going Sonic 06. I get you. That makes sense. That was a hate crime
itself. Absolutely.
Mm.
I don't know as well if you looked in the cabinet.
Oh, no. Please tell.
So when you are looking further at that scene, when you're looking into the cabinet, you can see some of the games that are in there. And one of them is Save Hitler's Brain.
No way.
A little visual joke that's in there.
I'm trying to think, how would that play? That can't be a platformer. I don't know. I'm thinking maybe it's more of a point and click. Like, I have no mouth and I'm a screen, along those lines, or a Fallout.
I imagine Fallout,
like Fallout 1.
Yeah, I like to think of it as like maybe one of those like text-based adventures where it's like, open the door, there's Hitler, he has a gun, what do you do?
I want to briefly tell you about Sonic and Bart would cross over yet again, but in the game's Lego Dimensions. Are you aware of this game?
No. What is it?
Essentially, it was one of these games, I don't know what company did it, but do you remember when Skylanders was popular in that Disney game where you buy the little models, you scan them into your game and then you can play? Lego did that. But it had loads more IPs, so it had people from Adventure Time, people from Ghostbusters, people from The Simpsons.
Right.
And you could have interactions with Sonic and Bart, and one interaction is this bit of saying, see, you got to get the Lego bits, Bart. Just take them. in exactly the same delivery by the current Sonic actor who's in all the Sonic films.
Whoa.
And it's really surreal to see. And in that Lego Dimensions game, the Simpsons playable level, because each IP had like a playable level, it's the whole episode of the Insanity Pepper. It's fantastic.
Amazing.
And it's got that nice Lego surreal humour and goofy, you know, young kids humour in there. It's really well done, folks. I'll clip in a few things here for it.
Hey, Bart, remember, if you see a gold brick lying around, just take it. Take it, take it, take it, take it! Take it!
Bart decides to nab some Bone Storm there, and he looks ever so suspicious getting out, and the music swells, and he just gets out the door, and he's seemingly home free, Hazel.
Seemingly indeed.
Until Don Brodka, special guest voiced by Lawrence Tierney, and I did a few research. Essentially, Hazel, he was a character actor. Well, throughout his career, he always played a tough guy or a mobster, mafioso type. His biggest claim to fame would come very late in his career. He was in Reservoir Dogs as, I think he was the head of the police or the head of the gang. Not one of the colours. And he's a gruff old fella. And the most interesting bit I got of that is he never worked on a Tarantino film again, because he got pissed up and argued with his nephew, and he shot at his nephew. And yes, that is really real, folks. Go check it on Wikipedia, because I did. And yeah, Tarantino said he'd never have him because he was just belligerent and unruly. And apparently,
do you know what?
This also happened when he was recording his lines. According to Bill Oakley, Josh Weinstein, who were behind this episode, he was just unruly. He was intimidating the staff. Again, he was being belligerent and not compensating, but eventually they got it out of him.
Wow. I mean, you've got to be really bad to get kicked off a Tarantino film, right?
But he's like, again, it's that synonymous gruff voice there. It suits the character really well. Don Brodka himself, Detective Don Brodka, he spots Bart, brings him in, and he's just ashamed. As we go into the act break as well, we get to see Gavin again and his mum. That boy's parents must have made some terrible mistakes. Oh, shut up, Mom! And that's that's how we end the act, as Don Brodka pushes Bart into the back. I forgot about this nice little detail on the Santa there. Oh, here you go, kiddo. No, it's not him. Oh, I see. And he crumbles up in anger.
Yeah.
Santa's pissed at how dare this lawless individual. takes him through to the back. Now, I've worked at a Next before, folks. I can tell you that is 100% accuracy. How it looks dingy, poorly lit. Random lady wearing a bra and having a fag. I never noticed that before until I... Just so surreal. I never spotted that before, Hazel. But we didn't have that at the Next I worked at. Maybe in Rotherham, but those days are behind me. How does Don deal with Bart here, Hazel?
He tries to scare the pants off him, I guess. He plays him a video with probably one of my favourite characters in the entirety of The Simpsons. It's Troy McClure, that you may remember him from such videos as whatever he reels off, because I can't remember.
Designated drivers, the life-saving nurse, and phony tornado alarms reduce readiness. I've got you.
I'm Troy McClure. You might remember me from such public service videos as Designated Drivers, the Life-Saving Nerds, and Phony Tornado Alarms Reduce Readiness. I'm here today to give you the skinny on shoplifting, thereby completing my plea bargain with the good people at Foot Locker of Beverly Hills. Shoplifting began here in ancient Phoenicia. Thieves would literally lift the corner of a shop in order to snatch the sweet, sweet olives within. Oh, Shaheka Zaramesh, will you ever learn?
Thank you. And the only reason that he is doing this informative video is probably because he stole something, because it's a favour to the good people of Nike, is it?
The good people at Foot Locker of Beverly Hills.
Yes, there you go.
So Don Brodka, as much as he's tough and intimidating, he's very lazy, because essentially it's a 10-year-old boy. Does he need to know what shoplifting is? I could tell him, no. I'll play this very early 70s, like, functional video here. And I just like, he's doing a history lesson around shoplifting. But Don I just like his dialogue because he keeps repeating himself like, "Hey, smart guy, don't talk to me there, smart guy, huh?" And like every other sentence ends with like, "Yeah, all right, huh?" Like that's a very, I don't know if you've spotted this, but like with my dad and a load of older relatives, that's a very like old male thing there, just to go, "Huh? You're listening, huh? You get me, huh?"
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why they do it, but it's just absolutely spot on here with Don.
It's just lots of filler
really
noises,
nice
isn't it?
Captured here with the, it is the Brodka character. Oh, they just really captured it well. And oh, great animation as well on Bart Hazel. Like he's actually twitching his arm and he's looking around really nervously. There, they've captured this so well. And I know when, like hell, the first time I got caught stealing. Like how old would have been? Like 7 or 8. I think I tried stealing. Not to make this like a fucking, we've already got the monkey news for the Pilkington references, but I think I literally stole a Mars bar, like he did, and like I was like crying, going, "Oh God, don't tell my mum!" Like being sick, so I can absolutely resonate with Bart. They've got this down to a T about how a little boy would react to the getting caught. We get him phoning up the Simpsons family.
Yes.
But he does it in a way that they're actually on the phone. Oh.
If I wanted smoke blowing up my ass, I'd be at home with a pack of cigarettes and a short length of hose. That's it, Mr. Comedian. I'm calling your parents. Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Simpson. This is Detective Don Brodka from Try and Save Security. That's right, Don Brodka. Your son Bart has been caught shoplifting. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's a shame, I know, but, well, try and have a Merry Christmas. They weren't home. Uh-huh. But I left a message on their answering machine. That's right.
Really clever, that one. Yeah. Like, and also, like, who does he think he is? This is Don Brodka from the Try and Save. That's right, Don Brodka. Like, who are you?
Yeah, exactly. And also, how did he know what number to ring?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that is a plot. I'd never spotted that plot hole before. You're damn right there, Hazel. Ah, Bart can't wait to run out. But he gets warned, you know, if you ever set foot in this store again, you'll be spending Christmas in Juvenile Hall. So Bart races on home. He's got to change that tape. And the family rush home. Oh, God, we got to change the Maggie. Dear God. And you think they've beat Bart to it, but then they play the message. Oh, how very odd. And we get Alan Sherman with Camp Granada. And, we should go to Camp Granada. Do you know anything of this record, Hazel? I know you're the top of the pops, top 40 expert here.
I only know this song from The Simpsons.
I did too. I looked into it further. Essentially, Alan Sherman was a funny man, comedian, writer, and back when it was very popular to have like a comedy album, you know, the 60s, 70s and all that there. He did like public domain songs, but he just write stories around them, like this Camp Granada bit. There's a load of like prominent names in the 60s, and it's like, oh, I don't even know who, but like, oh, you know, Lulu's sick from the gruel she's eating in the cafeteria. The camp counselors are, you know, throwing us in the bushes and that. There's alligators in the swamp. You know, it's just like you got typical jokey songs. They're nice and safe. They're, you know, something your nan would listen to there and get a chuckle out of there. That was very much Alan's style. So that's your little Alan Sherman corner, folks, for anyone who's only ever heard of this song in this episode. Like, I'm pretty sure we all have. So we get to the next day and Bart's fine. He's a free man, pretty much. He's solved the tape dilemma. Homer's big on the nog, though. Like, there's nothing but eggnog in that fridge because there's only 30 noggin days a year, Hazel, and then the government takes it away.
Honestly.
I've had eggnog for the first time, folks, and it was at the New Year's do I had with Hazel and Mike there, and it tastes like you're drinking liquid egg custard. It's fantastic. And I prefer it without booze, actually. It tastes very good with it, but run us through. Are you an eggnog gal yourself?
Of course I am. I love eggnog. It's one of my favourite things. And it's one of my favourite things, particularly about Christmas. And I'm so jealous of Homer's fridge, because in the UK, we can't just buy eggnog. You have to make it from scratch or steal some from Starbucks. I wish that Starbucks wouldn't take away the eggnog from me. I wish I could get eggnog all year round. It's so good.
Yeah, that's the thing. We don't have it in big cartons like the Americans Mm-mm. do there. Now, no. Forever growing up until literally like 2 years ago, I didn't realise eggnog was its own thing. In my house and in my mind and with my family, eggnog was what we'd call a snowball here in the UK. Lemonade and that Varnix creamy thing. I always thought it was that.
Advocat,
that's the one. Yeah, I always thought it was that, Hazel. Yeah, I thought, do you want a wee snowball, Shun? As my granddad would say back in the day. And I thought, yeah, that's eggnog because it's creamy looking and it's sweet. But no, I was duped as a kid. And now I've opened my eyes to eggnog, folk, and it's absolutely fantastic there. And Hazel and her partner make a really good one. But in a big smiling mood today there, as the family are having breakfast. Well, that's in good luck as well, because we're going to the Try and Save for the annual family Christmas photo. They end up going down there, and Bart, his heart's in his ass. He's absolutely sweating buckets. But yeah, he keeps seeing the visions of Don Brodka, does he not, Hazel, in the house throughout, yep. And particularly on the drive there as well.
Absolutely. One thing that I'd like to call out before we kind of get onto that bit is the lengths at which Bart will go to make sure that he doesn't look like himself when he goes to that Try and Save. And we get that really really good gag of him pretending to be Nixon with the big chin and the big nose.
Ah, yes, the chin putty. That's it. Then the dog has a bit of it as well, have a little chew on that.
But on the fact that the disguise doesn't work and that his mum doesn't want him to be dressed up in a funny way because she wants a nice photo of the family this Christmas, he sees images of Brodka everywhere, including the back of Homer's seat turning into Brodka and giving him a dressing down before he even gets there.
Uh-oh, almost forgot to lock the doors.
Well, I hope you're going to the Valley Vista Try and Save, kid, because you don't want to come to my store. Catfish?
Nice. Now, why did that bit resonate with you so much then, him morphing into the seat and giving him that final warning in Bart's own brain?
I really like the kind of the playfulness of it and the fact that it's not what you expect. It's not a, because I think generally The Simpsons tends to be quite grounded in reality. So when you get those little moments of absurdity, I think it really helps. And it's just the fact that he takes the exact shape of the seat that really tickles me.
It is very beautifully animated. Shout out to the animation department for that one. Oh, before we move on, I want to go through the family photos that Bart's ruined throughout the days. Capped off beautifully with him holding a pie stink and Homer being a Homer. Hey, I remember saying that. Absolutely got me when I was young and now even today. But that second one, if Bart had landed a prominent role in Hollywood, that one's getting brought up on Twitter, I'm just saying. So Bart's, like, really trying everything not to go into Try and Save, but, like, the most playful, like, daddish that Homer's been in, says, someone's got tiny little legs, and just, like, whips him on his neck there as they try and get the photo done within the Try and Save there. But we get, like, nice little bits of, you know, he's on edge there, he's trying to duck and dodge the cameras, he goes to sit down on a stretcher. It's a riot of a sailor, and all the alarms go off. He's sweating bullets, this boy. But in between all the madness and Bart's anxiety, we have my absolute favourite bit of this episode here, folks.
Oh, homie, look at that watch. I've always wanted a watch like that.
Well, maybe someone will give you one for Christmas. Now she'll really be surprised when she opens that ironing board cover.
And it's just Marge looking wonderfully at a watch. Oh, homie, look at this watch. It's so beautiful. And then Homer, you know, being the sweet talker that he is, just, oh, you know, well, someone might get you it for Christmas. Santa might have it in his stocking. And then we see Homer's big dumb face zoom into his brain, and he just goes, oh, now she'll really be surprised when she unwraps that ironing board. Like, for fuck's sake, of course. Of course he's doing that. Which is where I get to inform folks or remind them of, oh dear, like 2012 peak Facebook humour. Hazel, do you remember a trend of fellas, young fellas on Facebook, with videos and certain photos, giving them girlfriends a care package or a wrapped gift, and it will be, you know, Daz washing up powder or anything cleaning or cleaning gloves, and them going, happy birthday, babe. Then the video cuts out. Do you remember the sexist gift given in 2012, or is this just a Tyler memory?
I think it's just a Tyler memory. I don't remember this as such, but...
Really? No way.
Yeah.
Because I swear, like, again, it was like early days Lad Bible and all them shit pages and all that, but they would harvest these videos, put them in compilations, and it's just like, oh, you know how you always wanted to wear something, and then they're sniggering like cackling pigs behind the camera, and it's like all the marigolds and all the fucking fancy cleaners stuff there, and the girlfriends just look absolutely disgusting, like, you cretin at the camera. And then they're just cackling like, they're just cackling like pigs behind. I must be the only one that remembers. If anyone else remembers this, like, let us know on the Facebook page or on Twitter at TylerTMC, because this was definitely a trend. There was even some footballer did it, like, oh yeah, got the missus a care package and it's all that, and you're like, you should know better. You're like, you're in a prominent position, mate, like, for fuck's sake. Fucking 2012, yeah. Don't go back, folks. But yeah, and it just reminded me of this, like Homer being, you know, trademark shit boyfriend, as it were, from Pete 2012 Facebook. I don't know what how value that adds there, but that was just a very like specific moment in time for me, and it reminded me of this scene. And yeah, just Homer, what a shit house. Good God.
What this scene reminds me of is apparently 1 year at Christmas, Mike's dad brought Mike's mum a washing machine. That was her present, was a washing machine. And I'm just like, oh, okay. Right, something for the entire family, but no, that's her gift.
Has this ever happened to you, Hazel? Have you ever thought, oh, what's the coding behind this gift you're giving me? Are you trying to say something? Has that ever happened to you, shit gift?
Yes, I had a boyfriend once who decided that they would buy me a load of clothing, which, here's a top tip as a man. Don't ever, ever buy your girlfriend, wife, significant other, or partner any kind of clothing unless they've specifically picked it out and they have tried it on, because my God, I went absolutely ballistic. I was like, why have you bought me these clothes? And let me tell you, these clothes were fucking hideous. And it was very kind of, he meant it so innocently. It wasn't like a, oh, this is what you should be wearing kind of a thing. He meant it so innocently, but I was like, no, this is just completely not my style. What have you done here? I was so mad.
Bart is busy trying to, you know, hey, Ansel Adams, let's go. Trying to rush things through there. In the little like preview frames or like little dummy shots of what you can do, they've got Flanders in one. Time Magazine's Person of the Year. And Homer's great little quip of, must have been a slow year. Fucking brilliant. Mm-hmm. Love that line. He's busy sweating bullets there. They're about to take the photo there. They end up taking it. But with a nice little action shot and motion blur, Bart is yanked away by Don Brodkin. Hey, no returns for busted merchandise. And Marge, rightly so, because if this isn't real life and a man in his 60s working for the store just grabs your 10-year-old son, you would say, what the fuck are you doing with my son? Like,
absolutely.
Well, that's the thing. If we do real life optics on this, Hazel, regardless if Bart was guilty or not, something's happening to Don Brodker, surely. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you work in, like, marketing and all that and perception and everything else in your job. Like, what the hell happens here in real life? Like, what goes on now?
Oh, I mean, the fact that he grabbed him, that would be assault against a minor, which carries a sentence. So you don't want to be doing that, even if you are a security guard. But I really like the visual on this. And I really like the fact that the photographer just happened to caption the exact moment when Bart is being hooked away.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely perfect. And, well, that's the thing as well, like, on about the real-life optics. The fact he's accusing him, and then, even with the family, it's like, fine, you've got the tape, play it. Mm. Play it in front of everyone, in front of the, like, you're in Curry's, like, all the TVs there. Yep, we're going to set this up. All in the live link to embarrass this 10-year-old boy. Like, Bart will speak about this to therapist Zweig, Marge's shrink. He'll end up chatting lyrical about that to her, like, good God, this is really traumatic, Hazel, fucking hell. But with it, we get to see the smoking gun, we get to see the footage, and Bart tries to hide it because, no, Mum, I did it. And loads of murmuring, and they just can't believe it. And that's how we're in the act, with Bart being humiliated. We're getting to the final act now, and Homer's giving out to Bart, how could you? Stealing. I forget about this bit. I remember the Police Academy bit and the bad impressions, but I forgot about that. Haven't you learned anything from that guy who gives those sermons at church? Captain, what's his name? Like, fucking I think I mentioned it before.
I love that.
But like my dad doing naming conventions with anyone, like, oh, you know, some fella scored a hat trick today, you know, the big bug eyed fella, you know, the long streak of piss, Captain Shitter, like, what fucking absolute bollock nonsense from Homer here. Oh my God. But with that, we get some very nice acting from Julie Kavner and from Nancy Cartwright here, when they've got to be serious and get the gravity of the situation, because she realises, oh, like, you know, Bart's her special little guy, and even though he's a rapscallion in school, he's fine IRL, he's fine in public, he's fine doing his own thing. But no, like, he's flawed. She has to realise her son is flawed, and it's just the great tone of it, like, I know you're sorry. Oh, well, can I do anything? Go to bed. Oh, okay. It's very real life, Hazel. I thought this was absolutely excellent as to where they take the last bit of the story here. What did you think about the delivery here?
I thought it was excellent. I mean, the fact is, you know, earlier on, we've got Marge, who has this absolutely overwhelming and wholesome belief in Bart, and then just having almost like the vacuum of that, where actually, no, her son is not a little boy anymore, and he's done something quite terrible, that she just can't quite believe it. And I agree with the kind of the playing off of each other, that they do so well acting this scene out, and you can really believe that this is what happens. You know, this is how parents sometimes do feel, where they're just so, you know, they have their image of their children in their head of being these golden children, the ones that they've raised. And actually, you know, they're starting to find their feet and become adults, and maybe they're not making the best life choices. And I think that that's what Marge realises in this moment.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I won't get into it because I won't divulge it on the podcast here. It's a bit too much, a bit too personal. But this definitely happened to my mum with me at least a couple times, and it's the old, like, I knew when my mum was angry with me, because my dad raised his voice and was bark worse than bite, whereas my mum was just silent and calculated and saying, you know what you've done, haven't you? I'm like, and again, you know, I'm disappointed in you. How could you do this? Right, go up. I don't want to speak to you. Like, it's like the nice, it's the same tone. There's no raising. It's the same tone, so you listen in. And like Bart said, you know, I thought she was going to blow out at me, but no, she was just really quiet. And is it going to be one of those forever type things? And no, I absolutely understand this, because it was like, oh, is my mum going to remember this forever? And She did at the she would do at the time, but then, you know, like, you'd like to think with all people, like, you know, time heals all wounds and, you know, time helps progress things and that. But no, this is a great bit of slice of life, Hazel. Not to repeat what we just discussed a couple minutes ago, but it's just a really nice turn. And then you get, you know, oh, the tucking train's right on time, because Bart's kind of in the pits a bit, but Marge just goes, good night. Like, treating him like an adult, like someone who makes their own decisions, because you made this bad decision. Make your own decisions now, boy. So,
yeah.
Yeah, and you even get the nice little bit of them, Marge and Homer doing pillow talk. We've never seen this before, but we get Bart age 4 with a little handprint, and Marge's literally going, oh, you know, somewhere along the road his hand slipped away from mine. Really raw emotion, and very good, like peak early Simpsons there when they had James L. Brooks in. Very hearty, very serious stuff here. But a bit of levity now. Bart comes down. He didn't get woke up for breakfast. But, oh, where's my marshmallow and my hot chocolate? Oh, I think you're old enough to do it now. And, I mean, you're a hot drinks girly. You like your chai lattes and your eggnogs and all sorts of cool Christmassy drinks. What happens with poor Bart's marshmallow and the hot chocolate, Hazel?
It's his marshmallow fills up the entire mug of hot chocolate and absorbs all of the liquid to the point where he has to carve it like a loaf. What I will say as well about this scene is one of the punishments that Homer comes up with is no nog. And as you'll notice at breakfast, Bart doesn't have any nog. No nog. No nog.
No, he doesn't. I love the delivery on Grandma's, hey, give me a slice as well. it goes back to Milhouse's house, does Bart, and he asks him a real question, saying, oh, do you ever worry that your mum's going to stop loving you because of what's happened? And then, oh, Milhouse in typical kid fashion, I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about Piranhas. Did you see that movie? And it went down the periscope and and the old lady said it would happen. And like, I love how Bart's not just gone, no, that's stupid, oh, listen to me. He's just like, yeah, that was pretty good. Like, he's still sad, but he's just acknowledging the statement. And I was trying to think what my equivalency would be, and just because what we spoke about earlier, I think it literally would be like, oh, I'm scared of penguins, you know that one penguin, and he gaslighted that old dude and his dog, and then there's a diamond heist, and he had a gun. Yeah, that was pretty good. Like, I just recount the wrong trousers. Yeah, that was fire.
I think what I quite like about this moment is obviously Bart is trying to have his say, and he, you know, he's trying to work it out with his friend. He's having some really adult, grown up emotions, but also showing that immaturity that when Milhouse is talking about a man getting his eye eaten by a piranha, that actually he still finds that funny, and that he's, you know, that's the bit that he agrees with, and he's not pushing for grown-up emotions from Milhouse. He's still finding that out for himself.
And he even notices, hey, you're not playing with your Bone Storm anymore. No, because Milhouse has gone retro. He's a retro gamer now, quite literally. He's a ball and cup guy, and he's like a pig and poo with this. He goes, wait a minute, you're just trying to make me think that it's better so I don't get Bone Storm. No, like, literally hands it to him. No, I want your ball cup. And then they start scrapping like little boys, and then, oh, Bart's smoking! And then, almost pushed out again. He goes, okay, won't bother Milhouse, but, like, this might sound lame, but can I, like, sit with you and do mom stuff, he says. And Luann, bless her, I don't know how lonely or desperate she is, but, like, she pulls the most, like, I never thought you'd say that, and is so happy to have him just sit down and stamp up some Christmas cards, which is a relic in itself there.
Yes.
Do you still Christmas card or do anything digital with it, or not at all, Hazel?
Not at all. I don't really like Christmas cards. I don't like to give them purely because of the paper consumption, which is awful.
I like the delivery of like Bart's can only do the act for someone, and then he's just like, oh, tell me I'm good, please. Like, oh, the insecurity just eats away at him there. I love it.
Yeah.
We have him, he's left now, and then he hears his mum laughing. He goes, oh, great, she's happy again. He runs, And then he realises that his family have made a snowman family without him. And Homer's done a lot of... I don't know what mirror he's been looking in. Yeah, they've all made their own little snow sculptures there. Now this, I'd like a discussion with you, Hazel. This, I understand Marge's punishments and how she is with her son, and this is like obviously some a little bit of times past. Do you think them, did they mean to exclude Bart or not, I suppose is the main question. Because I don't know how to do this read as a grown-up man with people who've got, like, you know, issues with family or certain things that happen there. Like, is this a bit too much from Marge? Did they mean to leave him out there? Or was, do you think this was just, like, innocent? Oh, well, you were away, and then we just started doing this. We didn't think.
I think it's just very innocent. I don't think that that was kind of intended as part of Bart's punishment as such. I mean, we already see it from that breakfast scene where Marge is still very... you know, she's quite smiley with him when she hands over the marshmallows. So I don't think it was an intentional thing or intended to punish him. Yeah. So I think it was just a thing of, oh, well, you were out playing with your grown-up friends. You know, we're doing the kid stuff with the two girls.
Yeah. I tell you what, if they could have got Julie Kavner to say something like that. That would have solidified it. Bang on, Hazel. But he's got the short end of the stick. He's got the snow under the car that's... God knows what the hell is in that, because it's some colour. And they've got this just dilapidated Bart that he ends up building, and a little crow comes along and destroys half of it. And he's livid. Like, he seems to be an outcast, a black sheep, if you will. He goes to the try and save. Great lighting. Very... moody light. Reminded me of the crow. I don't know why. Maybe it's because it's ominous looking and it's grey clouds and all that. Because everyone thinks I'm the black sheep. Well, I'll show them what a black sheep can do as he's lit by the try and save. And he goes in. And seemingly to go down this, you know, path of wrong and crime.
I felt like in this moment...
Oh, God.
I felt like in this moment that he was actually going to go and steal the watch to go and give to his mum.
Did you get that first time or the early viewings then? Did you think that was going to happen?
No, that was just on this viewing where I was kind of like, I think as a kid I'd never really paid much attention to the part with the watch, whereas this time I was like, oh, he's going to try and win back his mum's affections by stealing a watch.
Oh, right, that's a good read. I think just from early watches and what I always think is like, oh, he's just gonna lean into this path of debauchery now. He's just gonna steal the game outright. Nothing's stopping him. His family hates him. But that's that'd be a nice little interwoven bit. Yeah, I get you now, Hazel. We're back in Evergreen Terrace, and oh my God, you talk about paper consumption horrible for the environment. Jesus, Marge is a right hun. She loves a fake snow, doesn't she? Good Lord, what is happening here, Hazel?
So they are spraying the tree with fake snow, releasing all those beautiful 1990s CFCs into the ozone layer to destroy even further. And not just destroying the ozone layer, but also destroying poor Lisa's brain as she's starting to feel dizzy from all of the fumes.
I'm surprised she didn't get on the old glue after this. God help her. you can see like her eyes go, and then she just drops the can very faintly. Oh my God.
Yeah.
And how many cans do you think they got through there? Because I think you can still have it now, can't you? But it is just a faint touch of like, ooh, it's a little dash of snow over here. Da, da, yes. Da. And you'll put it on like 5 sprays. Like, how many cans do they get through? Good Lord. Marge, yeah, like you say, seemingly she's still... you know, cares for her son, but, you know, he's always a different boy now. Comes through and say, hey, there you are, you can help me spray the cookies. And then she realises you're hiding something in your jacket, and then just great delivery from Captain. Oh, Bart, not again. Like, the disappointment straight away. Ends up chasing him. Looking back on it now, and the whole very old Twitter thread thing of, like, Does Marge have friends? Does she have a good life? The thing of, I spend 23 hours of the day in this house. I'm like, oh, honey, no.
Yeah.
What does she do with her life? Poor Marge. Bart goes to run away, but we get Homer a bit of assistance to Marge. Get him, Ma, and shuts the baby gate on him there. Nice delivery.
Yeah.
Right, well, hand it over to me, Bart, now. She's so annoyed. And then, oh, I can't believe you did this. And then you think it's the game. Oh, what is it, Hazel?
It is a really lovely picture of Bart that he had taken. And it also has the receipt that very clearly says, paid in full.
Paid in full. Yes. Oh, it's brilliant.
There you are. You can help me spray the cookies. Are you hiding something? What do you have under your jacket?
Nothing.
Oh, Bart, not again. Give it to me.
I told you, I don't have anything.
You can't hide from me in this house, Bart. I spend 23 hours a day here.
Get him, Ma.
There's no place left to run, Bart. Hand it over. Oh, Bart, I can't believe you did this.
I wanted to surprise you for Christmas.
Oh, sweetie, this is the best present a mother could get. I love you so much, my little bitty Barty.
Mom.
It's so heartwarming as well. Like, I watch this every time. It's not on the level of Mother Simpson, because that one always gets me choked up and teared up. Obviously the ending and then the famous looking into the night skyline. But this, I don't know why. I think it's the photo as well. Like, he's actually tried to look his best and be like a smart little boy in the photo. It's just really sweet. And then the score as well. And they embrace, and she's just back to mothering him. And it's really lovely, Hazel. This might be really soft and all that.
It's a Christmas miracle.
And then it's a fucking Hallmark extraordinaire. It's a Hallmark Christmas movie ending. And we even get the very cartoony, slumped, bad family photo. Puts his little photo in the corner. It corrects itself. Everything's back to normal now. And now we just get a fun little end to this. Because I got my present early. I think you should get yours too. Oh, I really like Lisa being like a snotty shit here. Just like, I want an early present. No, you'll have to wait till tomorrow. Yeah, it's the worst Christmas ever.
It's like so this. Rare it's to see Lisa behaving funny. Like that. It's, Lisa always tends to be the rational one.
I mean, Hazel, have you had examples of this? I mean, tell us what Marge gives to Bart there. And has this happened to you?
I've never been allowed to open a Christmas present early or anything like that. It was very strict in our household with tradition and things like that. But he opens up the present and it is... You think that it's going to be Bone Storm and you're really hoping that it is going to be Bone Storm for Bart. But it's actually Lee Carvalho's Putting Challenge.
Now, I know you love video games and I asked the clerk which is the one every boy wants. You got me... Oh, yeah! Thanks, Mom.
And it's the... And he puts the game down and you just see Marge's proud little face and he can't let it down. He goes, oh, yeah! Oh, thanks, Mom. To quote that vine, an avocado! Oh, thanks! Like, he's doing his best voice there. Oh, bless him.
Yes.
Like, has this ever happened to you with games, fashion, jewellery, toys? Like, have you had to pull that face? Or have you got examples of you wanted a Barbie but you got a Polly Pocket, anything like that?
No, I think I'm always quite gracious when I get my presents. Even if it's something that maybe isn't necessarily what I'd want to be opening. But... yeah, I've never had to lie all that much about it. How about yourself?
I was never been annoyed of like I got the lesser one or I got the cheaper alternative because I just thought, oh, cool, it's still a video game. It's still a Mr. Icy Freeze slush thing. God, they were the thing.
Yes,
it's still a form of like sticky alien to stick to the ceiling and piss my dad off. You know what I mean? I only ever got pissy when it was like. oh, I really think I'm going to get this. I'm not going to say I really want this. I'll just say it like a few times and then they'll get the message and it'll be like, oh, I really wanted... Oh, hell, we'll bring it back to gaming. I really wanted GTA 4 and then it'll be like... Oh, and I swear, like, it's just my family or my dad. It'll be like, oh, well, you know, I thought... Oh, we could get it in the January sale, couldn't we? They always have sales on at GameStation. I'm like, yeah. And then I'm through gritted teeth and I'm like, I've got to go up to my room and scream at my pillow because my dad's being cheap. Like, I'll have, like, all other cool presents, but I'd be like, no, like, I really wanted this. And then it's like, I have to come downstairs and put a face on.
Yeah.
That'll be it. But then it'll just literally be the pragmatality of my dad going, oh, well, you could get that cheaper in the cell. I know, but it's the event, it's the fucking event of the day, Dad. It's Christmas. Come on.
Like, what else am I going to do on my Christmas day?
Yeah, that's it. That's the only time it's happened to me, folks. So the family embrace. We see the Snow family outside, but over the credits, we get to see a bit of a YouTuber playthrough. We get to see Bart playing some Carvello Putting Challenge, and he just, like, he's clearly bored of it. We're trying to, like, shithouse it. So, like, I prefer Feather Touch. You selected Power Drive. Whacks it into the car park, and then it's, would you like to continue? You said no. What device do you think he's playing on? Because he says type in, like, 131.
Yeah.
Like, would this be pre-Mega Drive? Would it be, like, ColecoVision in America? Or, I don't know.
I don't know if it was maybe the Spectrum or something like that that maybe he was playing it on. Because that had a keyboard.
Oh, yes, it did. Yeah, there you go. We'll go with the Spectrum there.
Mm.
And with all this Christmas miracle and Christmas cheer, I'd love your final thoughts, Hazel, and your own unique rating out of 5, please, to send us on that sleigh ride home.
So I really like this episode. I think it was good that it didn't have a B plot. I mean, the only B plot stood for Bart. And I really liked that it really kept things nice and simple and it was really easy to follow. But there was so much that you could, you know, so many memeable moments, so many heartwarming moments, and a lot of good visual gags in there. Generally, this episode reminds me of Bart the Mother, which is season 10, episode 3. You know, we get it in that episode where, you know, Bart is bad. He's a naughty little boy and he can be a little shit sometimes, but actually he still has a big heart. And really deep down, he knows exactly, you know, he knows what kind of person he is and he has a good soul, even if sometimes he gets led astray a little bit. And I think that's why I really like this episode. And so I have decided to give it 5 cartons of eggnog out of 5.
You got to give him that eggnog quick, otherwise he'll take it away, Hazel. So I respect your rating there. You give all the eggnogs you can. For myself, very much matching the same as you, I think I prefer the season 9 one. As talked about with Bart burning the gifts, just because purely from you know, how it ends and it's more gag centric there. But if you want, like, golden era Simpsons heart and gags and meaning and joy and everything, this is really complete. Like, it's a real narrative. Like, with the namesake of our podcast, Uncle Mo's Family Feedback, in that episode where Bart sells his soul, he goes through a proper arc and he feels so many emotions and grief and guilt and then joy at the end. He goes through a proper emotional journey. He does it with this one and it's really superb. I'm going to match that Bart sells his soul rating and also match yours and give this a 5 out of 5 Manic Sonics. You just got to take it.
Welcome to Lee Carvello's Putting Challenge. I am Carvello. Now choose a club. You have chosen a 3-wood. May I suggest a putter? 3-wood. Now enter the force of your swing. I suggest Feather Touch. You have entered Power Drive. Now push 7, 8, 7 to swing. Ball is in. Parking lot. Would you like to play again? You have selected no.
Come to Uncle Mo's for family fun. It's good, 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 good.
Mmm.
good.